Welcome to the afternoon session of the CCWG Accountability. Welcome to those in particular who've been patiently waiting remotely for us to reconvene. Sorry, it took us a little bit longer than anticipated to recap what we had discussed this morning and to suggest to you a way to advance our discussions during the afternoon session. And we plan to do this in a two-step approach. So the first step, Mathieu will reintroduce you an accumulation of the requirements that we think we've heard from the various presenters this morning. You will remember that we have based all our efforts on requirements. So we thought it would be worthwhile distilling the requirements that you presented from your statements and put them all in one place. So as a first step, we would like you to confirm whether we have accurately captured what you deem essential as a requirement for an accountability mechanism. As a second step, we would then look at the various models that we have, look at the various models that have been newly introduced this morning, and have a discussion about their pros and cons, and whether, and if so, to what extent we think the requirements that we've established are being met by the various models. And hopefully we'll be able to rule out some of the options on the table and prioritize or reprioritize preferred options considered by this group. So without any further delay, and actually I was just doing this long introduction for the group to calm down and be full of attention and anticipation for Mathieu's intervention. Mathieu.
Thank you. Before you lose interest, so what we tried to do over lunch was capture what we've heard in terms of requirements or key concerns in the various presentations. But that's a form of summary which abstracts itself from the various scenarios intentionally. We'll come back to that in step two. And we've tried to map this. Okay. We've tried to map this on screen so that then we can exchange and see whether we've missed something. So this is very much based on the community model expectations that we have. So it's not to be confused with our overall requirements, sort of a going deeper into the requirement tree. What we've heard is our, and that just last word of caution, what we've captured here are requirements we've heard about in the presentations. It does not imply this is a group requirement, but this is what we've heard by at least one speaker. So first requirement in this graph, there's no order, was that there would be no single point of failure in the accountability framework. So separation of powers was mentioned. The providing leverage to the community to avoid this single point of failure, and that's where we had different views expressed whether this leverage was sufficient through the removal of the board of directors, removal or recall of the board of directors, with a mention that it should not take 3 years, that was added. And other view was there needs to be some authority to the community to have this leverage. Then we had a number of comments expressed on openness to all. The ability to adjust to changing internet communities in the future, the ability to be open to new participants, the ability to be open to very disparate interests and still bring them in to the ICANN model. There were requirements expressed on diversity of all the structures internally within ICANN, and there was a word mentioned of having diversity requirements that would be enforceable, but and that's the only time you will find the word the word enforceable here. There were several who said that the requirement would be that the U.S. legal system would be used as literal as possible, because otherwise it would send a bad signal for internationalization, and especially if the entire governance structure was too far relying on California law. So that was expressed. And finally, the proposal has to meet the IN and stewardship transition timeline. That's a requirement that was also expressed. Meeting the CWG expectations or conditions, you call them as you want, and of course, meeting the implementation time needed. So the time to implement is one key consideration in this requirement. In terms of concerns expressed, we've heard concern that the headquarter discussions would not solve problems. That's a bit of a, I would say, outlier here, but still that was expressed. The complexity of changes was mentioned several times in terms of concerns. We had a family of concerns about around infinite regress, meaning who watches the watchers, and the concerns about internal SOAC capture. And of course, a family of concerns around unintended consequences, mentioned through if it ain't broken, don't fix it kind of argument, avoiding the creation of new entities, avoiding any unknown territories we would get into. Acting outside corporate governance systems was mentioned as one of the concern. It's a slightly different view from if it ain't broken, don't fix it, because it's been acknowledged that the current model is outside some of the corporate governance standards, I'd say. And there was a concern of goodwill, which might not be sustainable on the long term. And that was also expressed. So our first questions are we missing any key requirement expressed during the morning and or concerns? And I see Tijani's hand is up. Steve and Alan, are you up in the AC room as well? Or all right. So Tijani first, and then Steve and Alan.
Thank you, Mathieu. It is about the requirements. I don't remember. Perhaps I was I missed it. I don't remember someone speaking about the timeline. It is not something that was mentioned this morning, I think, and especially because it is not a problem. You remember very well what the NTIA told us. They asked us what is the time needed for that. So we are not. We don't have anything to make us to hurry up.
Thanks, Tijani. Next was Steve.
Tijani, to answer your question, I did hear Alan say we could get this done by the end of the year. There was a couple of people mentioned about timing, not enough time to get this done and complexity. So there was certainly an implication that moving quickly was better than moving slowly. I would say that. My question is about two or three of the requirements where we call for things like diversity. And my question would be, do we want to say an absolute standard of diversity, or is it relative to say more diversity than the current, than the status quo? Are we open to newcomers, for instance? Today's structure has ACs and SOs, and there seems to be a place where any citizen on the planet at least has a designated place to go, ALAC being probably the most wide open. And if we say that that's what we have today, is the requirement that we improve upon the status quo? And if so, we would add things like more open than we are today, or more diverse than today, as opposed to just putting diversity and openness as absolute achievables.
Thanks, Steve. So I'm navigating through the AC room queue plus others not in the AC room, so that's a bit complex. I encourage you to go to the AC room as much as possible. So I have Greg, Alan, and then Becky and Caruso. Greg.
Thanks. Greg Chatton for the record. And I think maybe the term requirement, at least, is throwing me. And I agree with Steve that these should be viewed with some, with as relative as opposed to absolutes. And some of these, you know, clearly, to some extent, they're stated as absolutes, which makes them harder to find consensus around. So I would view those perhaps as starting points, not as endpoints. Clearly, we need to discuss them. And I can see that some of the branches go off in opposite directions, so clearly they are starting points. So I think we're a ways away from, you know, adopting requirements, much less all of these requirements. And that said, I would add my voice to those saying that we should be making our effort to sync up with the IANA stewardship transition timeline, not to sacrifice the quality of our work, but that we can't act as if we're working in a vacuum, because we're working in very much the opposite of a vacuum. And if we decide that we'll take the time it takes, we might be at this forever. So we need to decide what time it will take and try to work toward that in a responsible fashion, working without haste but with speed. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. I have Alan.
Thank you. In response to Greg's first point, that some of these things point in opposite directions, I think you did make quite clear these were the issues raised by individuals, not necessarily beliefs of the CWG at this point. One thing I think you left off is on your branch on openness to all, you're saying that we need to be open to new participants. I think a mandatory requirement, mandatory from my point of view, is that we are open to all the existing participants within ICANN, all the existing ACs and SOs. And that doesn't mean they can, in theory, participate. It means that they are willing to under the terms we're specifying. So I think that's really critical. In terms of timeline, I was at a meeting earlier today that you were invited to but couldn't make. And if I understood properly, and I had to leave early, the timeline we're looking at is we really need to have the bylaws passed by pretty much the end of this calendar year if we're to meet the U.S. Congress and issues that ensue, and factoring in the U.S. election. So that's, I believe that's the timeline that needs to be verified, but I think we're looking at, you know, not much later than December this year, January of next year, for actually having the bylaws passed. So that puts things on a pretty tight timeline in my mind.
Thanks, Alan. Caruso?
Yes, on the timeline, although the letter of the NTIA need to be replied, and having considered that never we had any deadline, but we have an objective, but a timeline is an issue, and we have to talk about that, because sooner or later we have to reply to that letter. This is point number one. Point number two is impact or potential impact on the CWG requirement, because CWG requirement is directly connected to the ICG activities, and we would like to know to what extent that requirement are maintained or need to be modified. Thank you.
Thank you, Caruso. So what I'm hearing in terms of this is, first of all, a clarification that this is a checklist of what we've heard, and in no way requirements that we're carrying further at this point. It's just to have a global view of the various items that were brought forward this morning, and which was actually very valuable. I am taking on board, and we'll provide an updated version with the comment about the improvement of diversity and openness. I mean, it's an everlasting journey. No organization is ever going to be perfectly diverse or perfectly open. and as well as to comment on the existing participants, which indeed Alan was clearly referring to this morning in his presentation. So that's definitely a fair comment. In terms of timeline, I think we've heard that from some in the room, so it does not mean this is the priority or that all our work should circle around the timeline, but certainly it was mentioned as one of the expectations from the group. And with that, I think we'll now move to step two. And I would like to introduce my dear fellow co-chair, Thomas, for that second step of the afternoon. That was the easy part. I will now go and get some coffee.
Okay, so we'll reconvene in 20 minutes. I just want that to be on the record in case not everybody has heard that. Don't we have any policy against discrimination of co-chairs? Not when it comes from Erica, right? No, she may do that because as a board member, she's a true community fellow member, right? So that okay, can we please have the Excel file in the Adobe room? So we've now refurbished or added to our inventory of requirements for accountability mechanisms. Let's now try to move through a table that we've prepared, or that I take full blame for it, because I'm not good at Excel. It's truly ugly, but I hope that it will help us structure our discussion a little bit. So what you find in the column is actually the different models that we've heard, all contributors. I have to apologize up front that we don't have columns for all contributors. We might add some. But, you know, Greg, for example, was speaking out on, in favor of a membership model, so we didn't give that an extra column, although we could. So certainly we don't want to discriminate Greg, right, as we wouldn't want to discriminate anyone. But the idea here is that we would look at the various models, the membership model with UAs, that should say that's auto-correction, so maybe, Alice, you can rectify that. Membership model with unincorporated associations that we should discuss, i.e. the reference model from our report. Then we have the designator model, the cooperative model, which has been tagged voluntary model so that everybody understands what we're talking about. Then we have the empowered SOAC model that has been suggested by Becky. We have the Malcolm model with open membership for the whole global internet community. We have my gift or the cadeau suggestion made by Sebastian, although the way I understood it, it's more a list of features and aspirations that we should have when working on a model, and I think that will turn out to be very valuable when we establish features for what might be our new preferred model. Then we have point made by Sam primarily regarding the danger or the caution that we need to ensure that ICANN as an organization will not lose its non-for-profit status. We had Alan offering a variation of the cooperative model with advanced conditional resignation letters from the directors. We had the idea of Paul, which was basically a merger of the Becky model with the Allen model with additional diversity requirements. And we had Erica reminding us of the jurisdiction issue and not breaking a workable system at this stage, which is a reminder that we should actually discuss jurisdiction in this context. So what we should do now is actually go through the various items that we find in column A. I suggest we don't call upon them one by one because that will take us too long. But I guess what we should do is identify the core features of the various models on the table, their main weaknesses or strengths, and hopefully advance our discussion on that basis. So the just opening up my own computer, the features that we should discuss are pros and cons for the various models, and to help more specifically their complexity, the issue of watch the watchers. You know, does a certain model have this issue, or is it present with a certain model? Is it absent with a certain model? The messaging, how easy is it to explain to the global internet community what we're doing here, which is also a factor that came out of the public comments. The perceived implementation challenges. I'm intentionally saying perceived because there are some who say it's easy, others say it's complex, others won't understand what we're doing. So that's complexity. So let's not discuss whether it's actually easy or complex, but let's just acknowledge if there is one model that is perceived to be more complex when it comes to implementation than others. Let's talk about unintended consequences. Let's talk about openness, the point that Mathieu made and which Alan commented on. And I've phrased it slightly differently, calling it flexibility. You know, how flexible is the model to let parts of the community change their status or their involvement or include new players to the game. Let's talk about diversity, participation, the CWG expectations. Actually, expectations is too weak of a word because there is a conditionality. So we need to make sure that the model that we prioritize is actually capable of meeting CWG requirements fully, because otherwise the approval from the chartering organizations is going to go away. We can't afford to have a single point of failure. We need to talk about authority. You know, how much authority does the community have over ICANN? NTIA criteria. So I think, you know, since the purpose of this exercise is to get a successful transition, we need to make sure that none of the models that we identify to be preferred makes that very transition impossible because it doesn't meet NTIA requirements. And finally, implementation time / time to adopt, because for the U.S. government, it might be good enough for us to adopt recommendations on implementation, but we don't have to be fully implemented at that same point in time. So without any further ado, I would like to ask you, encourage you, everyone both in the room as well as participating remotely, to chime in and maybe speak to the points that they find most relevant to them, speaking in favor or against a certain option. Okay, since this community has proven to be very shy, I can take... Do we have volunteers in the... Steve is not shy. Okay, Steve, take the first crack at it.
Okay, thank you. Steve Del Bianco. The column, I believe it's D, no, sorry, column E, is it empowered AC and SO? So if I understand you properly, you'd like us to very quickly speak to the pros, cons, et cetera, in that column and point something out. This is the one that Becky discussed, and it's very close to what Robin proposed. The pro is that it gives new powers to the existing structure. New powers, existing structure. The cons are that it will take time to learn how to design and use the new powers. The complexity is probably difficult to explain to people and understand it, and the complexity of designing the IRP procedures, for instance, is going to take some time. I think that once they're implemented, they may be easier to use than they were to design and implement. I don't think the watch the watchers is any worse than today, in the sense that if we're just empowering the existing ACs and SOs, to the extent that our existing ACs and SOs have internal accountability problems, then this doesn't make it any better or worse. So I don't want to dismiss it as if it's not a concern, but I don't believe it exacerbates in any way the watch the watchers problem. Unintended consequences would be the kind of things that the staff legal memo we discussed this morning would bring up. The diversity and participation are, again, they're up to each ACNSO, since we're not changing any of that in the bylaws. The CWG requirements are met. We've solved the single point of failure. We've given authority and leverage, and the NTIA criteria are met. As far as implementation time and adoption, I was asked about this when I testified at the two congressional hearings in the United States last month. They both wanted to know best case and so on. And we described this notion that if the community could come together with consensus and approve a proposal for accountability, and if CWG could do their proposal by the autumn of this year, that is to say after Dublin, it might still take a couple of months to implement the bylaws changes that are necessary for Workstream 1 powers. And I explained that that wouldn't mean that every single policy and procedure in an IRP would be done. That would take much longer. But that the bylaws changes could be implemented in a matter of a month or two after the community proposals came in. And then I turned to Congress and said, when they asked, what should we do? And I said, please back the community. Insist that I can implement and adopt the bylaws changes necessary to support what the community has asked for. And I said, that is the best gift you can give to the global multi-stakeholder community is to say that you back us and you want NTIA to hold ICANN accountable for that, of implementing the changes. The good news is as of Wednesday morning in Washington, at least one committee in the House of Representatives unanimously reported a bill that says exactly that. So they are trying to back the community. I think we can be grateful for that. I'll close by simply saying that Becky Burr's innovation in empowered SO and AC is that it does not require UAs of any form. I verified this with Holly Gregory at the break. I said if the GNSO, where I live, adopted a resolution tomorrow morning saying that the GNSO comes together for the purpose of exercising the powers given to the GNSO in the bylaws, and we passed that resolution in the GNSO and we posted it on the GNSO website, I said to Holly, I said, would that be sufficient for us to have the ability to exercise those powers and to have them actually be an authority that I can enforce? And Holly said, yes, absolutely. No UAs needed, no articles of incorporation, none of the overhead that we thought was there. And I think this is attributable to Becky, I think, just coming up with an inspiration on the way down on the plane. I don't know where it came from, but it solves so many of our problems and almost eliminates the need for the column B in your table. So apologies for the long answer, but you did ask us to run through every row.
So I think we need to ask Becky over a beer when her eureka moment was, actually. Sebastian. Before we move to Sebastian, Steve, I would actually like to challenge your offer for cell E6, because to me, what you're suggesting has lowest complexity.
Can you tell us what E6 is? Our chart doesn't have have letters.
Complexity, difficult to explain to people, and complexity to design IRP procedures. I would think that if it just needs a resolution from the SOs and ACs, that would be the lowest complexity that we can think of compared to the others. Certainly, designing IRP and maybe discussing or explaining the enhanced IRP to the community, that might be a challenge, but that goes for all the models.
Does it in fact go for them all? And I thought about that, Thomas, because the powers like recalling board, one or all, the powers like blocking a budget, blocking a bylaws, defining supermajority requirements with and without the GAC participating, those are the complexities that would be inherent in a model when we avail ourselves of all of the powers. And I love that Becky has eliminated any complexity at participating. Anybody can participate anytime they want. The GAC could decide someday in the future that they actually really want to get in here and start exercising their votes. That's fine. The GAC could pass a resolution saying they've come together for the purpose of exercising the powers available to them in the bylaws. They post the resolution on the GAC website, and they're in. So we want to make it open and available. So I agree that that's simple relative to all the rest. But the complexity is in articulating these powers and explaining the rules for IRP and the rules for reconsideration. Some of the other proposals we heard before the break didn't involve all of those powers. Some have wanted the simple status quo. Keep the voluntary model. Don't change anything. So that's why I recognize that there is some complexity remaining.
I see that there's some opposition. So without having to listen to all of you, can we agree on that the complexity is relatively low for that, and that I would add that the messaging is easier, or relatively easy, compared to the other models, because we want to be able to compare. And if we say that, you know, I think every new model has its complexities, right? But, you know, that's what I'd like to suggest before moving to Sebastian and Bingham.
Thank you. What is interesting here is that I have the impression that we jump to the swimming pool of the membership model because we had this legal advice, and I'm not sure that if we don't have that at the beginning, the proposal made by Becky would have been what some can call the status quo. It's not a status quo. I agree totally, because what we are doing is changing a lot of things within the current organization. But some people name that status quo. It's a wrong name. And I think looking to that and what the status quo was supposed to be eventually part of my proposal, it's all the same. It's to build on top of what we have today, and then I like this way of thinking of doing, and I think it's a very good enhancement of the current work of the working group. Thank you.
Thanks, Sebastian.
And maybe we don't need to spend too much money in the future with bad advice. Sorry.
Yeah, I think we shouldn't. Not every advice that is not handy for individuals is necessarily bad advice. I think this was extremely helpful to inform our discussions, and I guess we've been reassured that by taking the route, or if we should do so, of what Becky has suggested, that still the SOs and ACs could exercise certain powers. So I think that, you know, legal advice was the basis for exactly doing this. Next in line is Greg, please.
Thanks, Greg Chatton. And Thomas, I'm glad you said that the legal advice was the basis for Becky. Indeed, legal advice, one sort or another, has been the basis for all of this. So I don't think we could have gotten where we've gotten without legal advice, because we're dealing with, on one level, a legal problem. I'm trying to speak to the second column, but they're labeled very differently in the screen and in the Adobe Connect room. In the Adobe Connect room, it says membership model with AUS, which I'm not sure what that means. And then it says under here, I think, membership model without UA's reference model. So I'm not exactly sure what is being said in either column, but...
It should read membership model with UA's.
Okay.
That is a typo in the, because some of the complexity to the membership model as discussed as our reference model in the proposal stems from the fact that people don't seem to like the notion of UAs as separate alter egos or avatars or whatever they called it. So that is to characterize the membership model based on unincorporated associations.
Well, I think there's been a lot of old wives' tales spread about what the UAs could be. I think they're really intended to be rather similar to what's been proposed under the empowered SOAC. It's intended to be a paper-thin organization. It's just a final point of execution for the SOACs. It's not intended to be a separate organization that meets amongst a separate group and makes separate decisions. It's intended to be a delivery mechanism for the decisions of the SOACs. But in any case, in terms of the pros of the membership model, first, membership model is what is designed by law to meet the needs that we have. You know, it's kind of the right model from an objective point of view. Secondly, it meets all of the it authorizes all of the powers that have been discussed. All of the community powers can be executed using the membership model, so we don't have to discard any powers. The cons are that it has inspired irrational fear in people. Complexity, on the one hand, we do have a problem to solve with how to enact the or how to provide the UA or the legal entity for the membership to be the member. But I think, again, it's not much more than the statement that has been proposed under the empowered SOAC. So I think I wouldn't actually count that as a complexity, but I think it's still something that needs to be resolved. As far as watching the watchers go, again, I would say that that's no worse than the current situation. It's really, except to the extent that we need to make sure in enacting the UA, that the UA has no independent authority to do anything other than to act as the delivery point for the SOAC. So that, I guess, is the watch the watchers issue, is controlling the, you know, proper control of the UA or a proper narrow mandate for the UA. Perceived implementation challenges, that seems to be rather long, is the implementing the UA. And then, or maybe that is the only real issue. After that, it really isn't terribly different from a number of the other models. I guess there's also potentially the issue of controlling legal entities so that they don't necessarily go off and do whatever they want to do. But I think that's a perceived issue. I don't perceive that the SOACs are going to act any differently when they have this narrow extra power to use as members. Rest of it, in terms of flexibility and openness, since all the work is actually going to be done at the SONAC level, it's just as open as our current model, what we do today. Same thing for diversity participation. It certainly meets the CWG's expectations, probably better, at least as well as say, the empowered SOAC model, and better than others. I don't think there's any single point of failure issue. As far as authority goes, it's very much a huge pro. This is a model that gives absolute authority, or the most authority possible to the community, because members are the ultimate authority in a membership organization. As for the NTII criteria, I don't have a judgment on that. Implementation time, again, as long as the UA is not complex and separate, it's kept simple and short, to be established with a one-paragraph document. I think the time is similar to the empowered SOAC model.
Thanks, Greg. We have a queue of Ellen, Aubrey, and Cabos.
Thank you.
It will be your turn. Ellen, Aubrey, Cabos, okay?
Thank you. I'm not going to go down the long list and try to categorize everything. In my mind, several of the items listed across the top, the different presentations, represent very close to the same thing using somewhat different words. And in some cases, the details may differ, but were not necessarily all that important. I, for example, talked a fair amount about removing directors. If we empower the ACs and SOs and ultimately don't have the ability to remove the directors, I personally can live with it. I don't think that stick is necessarily needed. Others, I believed, thought the stick was mandatory, and I included it in my option that I presented. So I think there's a lot of commonality between them. We're using, tend to be using different words, and I think we need to get around that. I will comment on one thing Steve said. He said that
interrupting, but that's exactly why we're doing this.
No,
to get away from, you know, to boil it down to requirements.
Okay.
And therefore, I think it would be valuable for you to spell out the commonalities, if there are any. Or the differences.
I will do that. Let me make the one comment I was going to make, and I'll go back to that. Steve said some of the people who presented today did not, you know, when we were talking about the status quo or how we would do things, we did not talk about things like reconsideration or the IRP. From my point of view, I assume they were given, and they didn't really come into the enforceability issues. They weren't omitted because I didn't want them. They were just, I assume they were there. They're a common point. And I suspect some of the other people passed over them for a similar reason. I have, going back to try to identify the exact differences, if you had suggested that a half a dozen of us over lunch get together and try to identify where what we were saying was different from each other, or was the same thing using different words, I suspect we would have been able to come up and be more concise. When I listened to Becky speaking, I didn't hear a lot that was at odds with what I said. She didn't talk about the director removal, and I've already addressed that. The rest of it, I think I was talking about re-empowering and strengthening the power of ACs and SOs without necessarily the legal right for them to take ICANN to court. But putting in the bylaws, all of those things. I heard the same words from a number of other people. So I think we were generally talking about the same thing, perhaps with different implementation details. I didn't memorize them well enough to go through them one by one and say where I think there may be small differences. And I heard a lot of people saying very similar things. I heard Becky and Avery and Roloff saying things that I thought were, if we're stuck together in a room, we could probably come to a common presentation pretty quickly.
But I guess, Alan, that's an excellent point to capture. No, that I think in our discussion, and that's my observation as well, if I may say, that we're using different terminology, different names for different models, but actually that there's more common ground than we might have thought. I've lost my Adobe.
If I may add, more common ground other than those who want the formal UAs and designator / members, yes.
Yes. Starting from the cooperative or voluntary model. Avery is next.
Thank you. A couple things. First of all, I want to challenge the facticity of inspired irrational fear.
That was my favorite one.
Yeah, I know. And it's a lovely phrase.
Yes.
I have two, perhaps they're irrational, fears, so that I'd actually like to explicitly list my irrational fears. One of them is that it does turn an American solution now with NTIA as our guardians into an extremely American solution with American courts as an integral part of our policy mechanisms, which I think is possibly problematic, at least to some folks. And so that's definitely one of the cons I would like to propose on that, and I think it goes beyond an irrational fear. Certainly there would be people that would question it. The other one that I keep bringing up on that is as new structures, as new ways of structuring things, they do bring into question new accountability issues, and in a sense what we are doing is solving the accountability at one layer, the global ICANN layer, at the next layer down. We're sort of, let's move the problem down and it'll therefore be better at the top layer. That may or may not be true. So I think that those are two issues with it. And then with a certain amount of hesitation, but still a feeling that it needs to be done, a complexity in either in the membership model or the, I think it would even be in the empowered SOAC, where we're giving all SOACs an extra power in a sense, that we have never discussed what is the implication on the special bylaws power that the GAC has. Because at the moment, we have done a sort of equalization of the GAC by giving them special bylaws considerations. If we put in a system that basically makes them the same as everybody else across the board, equal footing, I would gladly volunteer for priestess of equal footing, but at that point, have we actually given GAC a beyond equal footing by saying, not only do you have equality everywhere else, you also still have the special bylaw. So I'm just putting that on the table as a complexity that needs to be dealt with in either empowered or SOAC. And I do that with a little bit of trepidation because I really don't want to get the governments of the world really pissed off at me. But I really think it's a complexity that we have to look at. Thanks.
Quickly reacting to the point of irritating governments, I think that was the choice of language that you... I think that's something that we need to discuss further and in more depth, because what you alluded to, the role of the GAC in this whole changed environment, also triggered some comments from governments itself. And from the questions that we heard, from the interventions that we got during our calls, there is certainly the question whether the GAC can take a legal format, whether the GAC can chime in a voting regime. And so I think while we offered a participation on equal footing, not discriminating the GAC with our best intentions, we may have caused some trouble that they otherwise could have avoided. No, but I think it's for the GAC or for governments that are represented in this room to maybe speak up at this point and say, okay, RSEC and ASEC have now chosen to stick to their advisory role, and the GAC could easily do the same and thereby avoid some of the complexity that we have landed them with, to put it that way. But I guess that, you know, that's something we should bear in mind and discuss in more depth, but before we do so, let's follow the queue. Caboos is next.
I think you put some elements, just pros and cons, advantage and disadvantage. There should be some proportionality in the number of advantage that particular distinguished colleagues they put. We hear that there is a big pressure to a particular case to put many advantages and so on. I can do this similarly. I can put a line of a disadvantage for particular things which I hesitate to do that. So let us proportionally discuss all issues in a more open and neutral manner and do not push for particular type of the things as we did in February. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboos. Robin.
Thank you. This, I just was going to speak to the empowered designator column there and what I saw as being some of the pros and cons of that particular model. So for the pros, I guess we have the lack of complexity, that it's, in fact, it might be the easiest of the models that we're looking at to actually implement. I also think that the flexibility of it and the openness of it, particularly with people outside of the U.S., outside of the ICANN community, would be considered a pro for that particular model as well. Where I would see the negative, and I'm sure people would agree, is that it isn't the tightest level of control that we could have over the board, and so those who see that tight control as being the primary driver, that wouldn't work for them. But I think that we could achieve a lot of that perhaps not control, but just engagement and mutual alignment of interest just through more productive interactions and processes internal to ICANN before we get to a crisis point where the board and the community are on different sides of an issue when it's decision time. So that would be the really the only negative that I see to it, but I think that the pros of the quick, the ease and the flexibility and the lack of complexity to be particularly helpful, especially since we're trying to do this in time for a transition, the IANA transition in the next year or so. I think it would be the easiest. Thanks.
Robin, sorry, just a quick follow-up question. In terms of the only negative point that you found, what can we populate a cell with? I would like to capture that and populate a cell. Can you provide offer some language?
On the negativity issue, I think it's not the tightest control of the board. I think the board has a little bit more leeway in that model.
The empowered SOAC model.
Empowered designator. But again, I think we're talking about the same thing on those two models. So I guess either column.
So Alice, actually, that would need to move to the column C. Right. Thank you. Next is Tijani.
Thank you, Thomas. I do agree with Robin. I think we need only two columns here. There is two models discussed, I think, in my point of view. I think the question should be more, are you in favor of the UA or not? Because this is the problem. Membership and the designator needs the stakeholders to constitute an incorporated associations. So this is the question. The other model doesn't require that. And I think this is the main problem that we are facing. And if you ask me about the cons that they have for the UA, I can give you some.
Thanks, Tijani. This is very helpful. And after we've heard Malcolm, I'd like to try to capture some interim results based on Tijani's proposal. So next in queue is Paul, please.
Thanks for that. I thought I'd first of all apologize to all the members here because the people, things like my name down there hasn't got a written presentation behind it, so it's just been some thoughts. So, you know, compared to the early work where everybody's had a chance to read materials, it's not an apples and pears comparison. But just to clarify, in terms of your criteria there, the sort of thing that I was proposing, just so that we've got clarity about it, I think it's basically the Becky's model, but moving with actually Alan's previous position, where there is the ability for midterm board member replacement, and there is an ability for the spilling of the whole of the board. Where both of those have a high standard. I agree with Jonathan's point of view about leverage, but I do think also we've got a form of representative democracy here. People sort of, we're not trying to set up a system whereby the community is sort of voting on every resolution, and therefore there's got to be some high criteria for where you replace midterm. I think the additional item also is some wording, and this needs to be put in, of provision of diversity obligations on the ACs and SOs, not just on the at-large. At the moment, it's the at-large which picks up the diversity obligations of the board, and I think the other ones probably need to, that needs to be examined in my proposal. And so in that sense, that adds a little more complexity. I think it does allow watch the watchers in the sense that you clearly have the ability for SOs and ACs to move to have the board replaced or midterm board replacement. I think it's relatively easy to message. I don't think the amount of challenge, I think they're probably moderate. It's still similar to what we have, with the possible unintended consequence of people feeling fearful that they're going to get replaced. And so that's why this question of how high is that bar, I think, is an important question to be resolved. It has diversity participation, so I think it meets some of the other criteria.
Thanks, Paul. That's very helpful. So that's also leaning towards a variation of the empowered SOAC model, basically. Alice, we should capture the diversity topic to the empowered SOAC, and then we can delete the Paul column. Not to delete Paul, but to capture his idea and marry it with the empowered SOAC. Greg has raised his hand.
A couple of points. I think, but I'll defer to others, including Robin, on this, that under the empowered designator model, a con would be that we don't have authority over the budget or strategic plans in the same way as we might, at least under the membership model or maybe even the empowered SOAC model. Secondly, in terms of the cons that Tijani alluded to, I'd like to hear what they are, because I think some of them may come from a misunderstanding of how flexible and lightweight the UA model actually can be. And in any case, identifying those cons is important, because it may be entirely possible for those cons to be avoided while still putting a UA in place as the endpoint, or for an SOAC to exercise its decisions as a member. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Malcolm.
Thank you. I was going to speak to the open membership model, as I believe you hoped. To be clear what we're talking about here, the open membership model is the idea that all the powers and mechanisms that we propose creating go to and remain with the SOACs, and that the only thing that it adds is the idea that members of the public at large will be able to join ICANN as a member and then would have the right to enforce the bylaws ensure that the bylaws have been adhered to. So the key advantages are, firstly, it is as close as possible to the existing situation. It doesn't change any of ICANN structures at all, apart from the ability to create members. It also doesn't require any of these entities to change their status in the way that some of the others models would have done, while still achieving the key requirements that many of us have of enforceability. It is also, and I think this is going to be important to many people, it is one of the least American of the approaches, in the sense that it doesn't depend on the peculiarities of American law, or to a minimal extent. Yeah. So UAs are a structure that are a concept that is just not known to many of us if you're not American. So there's that as a concern there, and designators is completely new to me. Yeah. So this is just the idea, well, everyone can be a member. And it also creates the sense that ICANN is a more global organization, because people from all around the world can be members and give that sense of global diversity to it. So they're the pros. The cons, I think the principal con is that if you say that everyone will be a member of ICANN, it might give rise to unwarranted expectations as to what the members would be able to do. Because actually our intent is to leave the powers with the existing SOs and ACs. And some people might think, if we're going to allow everyone to become a member of ICANN, that would suddenly mean that they get a whole bunch of additional powers that we're not intending to give them. So there may be a mismatch there. From a complexity point of view, it's straightforward. It's just allow people to join as a member. So that's straightforward. And from a watchers point of view, it's also simple as well, because you're giving the power to enforce with the people whom that is supposed to be for their benefit, the people themselves. So that one there, I would say a good alignment on the watchers to watchers. On the messaging, I think it's a positive message. Everyone in the world can join ICANN. on the implementation challenges, this is a key one. It does depend on correctly structuring the membership agreement so that we don't give members powers that we didn't intend to do. So that would be an implementation issue for the lawyers, to make sure that members did not acquire powers without any intent to give them to them. And essentially that covers the unintended consequences there as well. It's basically work for the lawyers. As for flexibility, openness, diversity, and participation, I think we can group these together. Clearly, the idea that everyone is entitled to join ICANN if they're willing to apply and to accept the membership agreement has maximizes all of these. So this model is clearly going to be the leading candidate on those criteria. It provides the mechanisms to support the CWG expectation, because all it is doing is what all the other models have proposed, plus a mechanism for enforcement, for anybody to do the enforcement. So it meets that expectation. There's no single point of failure, because actually if you've got many members that can join ICANN, then any of them could provide the enforcement function. And the authority lies with the public at large, so there is no problem of lack of authority there, because the authority is aligned with who the authority is to be exercised on behalf of. Similarly, the NTIA criteria I'd answer in the same way as the CWG expectation. We've decided how we best do that. This model doesn't provide any variance, it just provides the variance as regards the enforceability question. The enforceability time I will defer to the lawyers on. It was just a question for them to get writing.
Thanks, Malcolm. And I had indicated earlier that I would, based on Tijani's suggestion, that I would try to take stock of what we have so far, and then certainly I'll give the floor to the others in the queue. What I see happening in this room is that we have quite some opposition, quite some critical comments for the membership model, for various reasons that we've now also put into this table. And then we've heard from some that basically we only have one competing and viable option, which would be the SOAC model that seems to be getting a lot of traction, even from Robin, who formerly spoke very much in favor of the designator model. It was my understanding, Malcolm, that you came up with this idea of unlimited membership because you did want to offer something to overcome the predicaments with the UAs. So I think that maybe even you might be okay with an empowered SOAC model looking at this because we didn't have it earlier. So what I'd like to test is whether, you know, we could maybe cut this conversation short, say that the membership model, which has once been our preferred option or reference model from the report, is something that we should actually take off our list as the prioritized model, and that we should focus on and further work on, further develop the empowered SOAC model, because that seems to be meeting the features that most of you have asked for. And as we move to Avery, maybe you can also speak to the question that I've just raised.
Okay, that wasn't why I... This is Aubrey speaking. That wasn't why I originally put up my hand, but I'll certainly say something about it at the end. And actually, at the beginning, I'm fine to take the members' member then off the table. I think you can do that, but that's beside the point. I never wanted it on the table. So my saying that doesn't mean a whole lot. And I'll be honest. What I really put my hand up on was the notion that anyone can join ICANN. Now, I have argued quite strongly that anyone can participate in ICANN because our working groups are open, the community comments, the outreach we do. But in terms of membership, people have to apply. People have to meet criteria. Not everyone does meet criteria. So to say that anyone can join ICANN as a member at the moment, or a different sort of member, as a participant's not right either, but as a constituency or ALS or Rollo or stakeholder group member is not a true statement, I don't believe. Anyone can participate. Anywhere in the world can participate in ICANN, but the whole, every single group has criteria, and I know of people that thought they were non-commercials that weren't non-commercial enough. I know of people that are not at large enough. I know of people that aren't commercial enough. You know, for every group, I know of someone that was rejected for membership at some point. So that isn't a global fact. Participate, yes. Be a member, no. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. Next is Jordan.
Thanks, Thomas. I think a con of the Malcolm million member model multi-million stakeholder model I think, you know, if there was any meaningful power granted to people under this model, lots and lots of them would join, and there'd be an administrative cost in actually dealing with them. I mean, what are the people going to do? Sign up on the website, you need to have a database. You'd be sending them updates, blah, blah, blah. So there would be actually an organizational burden associated with this that may not be trivial. On the other hand, if there is no power for these members other than the right to take court action if the bylaws aren't followed, almost no one's going to do it, and it doesn't solve the central problem of trying to reallocate power. And you'd have to change the bylaws in all sorts of complicated ways to create classes of these members so that when they're acting, if they choose to act within the SOAC structure, they have the powers that were set out in the report. So in all, I think it has cons of complexity and administrative burden when you really think through all the implications of it. I wanted to respond a little bit to something that Avery said. I think it was Avery. Or someone else said about the I'm having a complete mind blank. Greg said, there's been the odd mention of people understanding or not understanding the thing that's in the first column, the proposal membership model, and I still think, you know, I've used that language in the past, but it isn't right to talk about people understanding or not understanding. The problem is that we didn't tie it down in enough detail that people were understanding it differently. So all of the fears and stuff that have been raised are perfectly reasonable when you have in mind a way of implementing that membership model. So I think in all, I just wanted to say that the empowered SOAC model looks very sensible from where we're at today. Thanks.
Thanks, Jordan. Tijani is next.
Thank you, Thomas. Let me give some cons of the models that need a UA. The first problem is that it will prevent some of the community members to participate in the decision making, since they are unable or unwilling to go with the UA associations. Second problem will be that the community will have a problem of being sued under any jurisdiction, since they are a legal personality and they can sue, but they can be sued also, and this is perhaps a problem that can harm the community. Another problem is that at the final step, the ICANN affairs will be managed by Kurtz, since there is always possibility of escalation till going to the Kurt. So I personally don't find it appropriate that the ICANN affairs be managed by Kurtz. And the last point is that we are looking for enhancing the accountability to the community. The UA models will, in fact, make the board accountable to the community, but not to the members. But what about the accountability of the members to the community? So the single point failure is still there. Thank you.
Thanks, Tijani. Next is Willie.
Thanks, Chair. Just listening to this discussion from the outside of it, it strikes me that the test here is will the community powers be effective under whichever of these models? Because it's no use having these powers if they can't be exercised. And I think that what I see here is the discussion of the very important issue of vertical accountability between the community and the board in a classic principal-agent relationship. And it strikes me that whichever of these models is chosen, it must be capable of being exercised. Otherwise, it will not be of value. So it seems that either the UA or the SOAC model could work, but I would urge that they be looked at very carefully in terms of any possible chinks in that position. Just an observation.
Thanks, Willie. And rest assured that it was our plan always to put any proposal that we come up with in front of the lawyers to see whether it's going to be robust in terms of the requirements that we have established, and the community powers are an integral part of the set of requirements that our group has come up with. Next is Greg, please.
Thanks, Greg. Just briefly, to respond to the cons that Tijani brought up, I think under the model that I was expressing, which maybe deviates from the reference model somewhat, but I don't think so, actually, the decision-making would still take place in the SOs and ACs. It's only the execution that would take place in the unincorporated association. There would be no separate decision-making capacity within the UA. In terms of the possibility of being sued, the UAs, at least the California UAs, offer limited liability. So it's only the UA that gets sued, not the individuals. Under the current situation that we have here, it's entirely possible for individuals, even individuals in an SOAC, to be sued for the decisions, and there would be the only limited liability they would have is if it was decided that somehow ICANN's limited liability protected the decision-making of the SO and AC because it's all kind of within the bubble. And that may be. But either way, there's you know, the ability to sue somebody who's made a decision that negatively affects you doesn't disappear. It's only a question of how you sue them. Something that provides limited liability, whether it's the UA or conceivably ICANN itself, is what you want, rather than being exposed. But I don't think we have a proposal that's neither. In terms of being managed by courts, I think that is kind of really that's baseless. There's really the idea that somehow we're going to be in court all the time just because there is an entity that has standing to go to court I have the ability to stab myself in the eye with my pen, but I don't do it. You'd be surprised. But going to court is a hell of an option for, especially for an entity that has no counsel, no war chest. I think it's the idea that the courts are all of a sudden going to be full of ICANN matters, I think, is just completely far-fetched. I don't see how it would happen. I think that the general activities of the SOs and ACs will remain just as they are now. Again, remembering that the SOAC would have to decide to go to court to and send the UA there just as it's execution point. As far as the issue of if you only have some community people in the membership, that is something that is an issue. How do you involve in any of these cases all of the community members? You know, so that's one that is, there is some issue there, but that may be an issue in some of the other models as well. You know, so that's one for which I don't think there's a complete answer. Although then we go back to, I think, to the community council idea, which is not one of my favorites, but at least it did solve that issue, that decisions could be made at that council level and then just executed by the members. Again, the members just being an execution point. Another idea that is possible is to just have all of the SOACs get together and to form a single member, and have this just be a one-member organization, and have all the decisions made kind of outside the member, and just have that single member be the execution point. That's a kind of a new variation. I'm sorry I didn't mention it earlier, but that would solve the problem of who are members and who aren't members and the like. So I don't know if it's too late for that to be a new column. Instead of everybody being, every individual human being a member, that there's only one member and it's just the final execution point for all of the current structures. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. Jonathan, then Cavus, and then Malcolm.
Thank you, Jonathan Zook, for the record. And I guess I want to come back to Johnny's comments to some extent. We actually had an email exchange about some of those same points. And I guess just to take a step back, I think one thing to remember is that when we shed a lot of the extra discussions and things like that that happen inside ICANN, one of the number one things that ICANN does is create contracts with contracted parties to actually run the DNS, right? And so at its core, everyone's setting policy and ultimately what might end up in those contracts, but contracts is what they do. Those contracts create legal standing that is ultimately enforceable by courts. So, and yet, all those parties don't spend most of their time in court. They deal with contract compliance and the processes that are internal. So I don't think ICANN is an organization that's been afraid of enforceability historically, because the real work of ICANN is these contracts, and every one of those contracts creates legal standing and the potential to end up in court, but that's what empowers ICANN over those contracted parties. And so, I mean, I think there's a big analogy to be drawn, and there's no reason that only contracted parties should have a formal relationship with the organization. So, I mean, that's one issue. And then the other issue that I hear a lot of, and Greg, I think, began to mention it as well, is this notion that we haven't yet solved the problem of accountability of the community to the, of the ICANN community to the broader Internet community. And I completely agree that we haven't yet solved that problem. But I don't see that in any way as an argument not to solve the problem of the board's accountability to the ICANN community. At the very least, we'll be creating an incremental improvement in overall accountability of the institution of ICANN, and a more empowered community may, in fact, be more attractive for participation by the Internet community when they see that the community is ultimately the one driving the organization. So I think that's a problem that needs to continue to be worked on, but I'm not sure that it's the problem with which we were presented here, because we're looking at this abstract maternalistic entity of the United States government and how to replace that role in what hopefully is a more sophisticated framework for accountability than previously exists. But I don't think anyone assumes that we've solved every problem of the organization with this framework, but we've made another increment, another step in the maturation of the organization.
Thanks, Jonathan. I'm not sure whether Malcolm or Cavus was first. Malcolm, okay, Cavus, please.
Thank you, Thomas. I think the whole purpose of this exercise of membership was to empower the community to the maximum level with respect to all aspects of decision making. Having considered the difficulty and restrictions and problems to be a member, it may result that not only we achieve to empower the membership to exercise its power, but on the other hand, we expower or empower or dispower the membership because they cannot join to be member. They cannot. Once they cannot join to be member, they do not benefit from exercising those power. And above that, you also result in an organization with more and more inhomogeneity. That some of the constituents have power to do something, some others do not have power to do something. So you end up something that the inclusiveness, that the democratic, and so on and so forth, would no longer, which is part of the main core value, would no longer be achieved. I don't see any reason why we push something which acts against its purpose at the end when implemented and if implemented, which has very difficult things to be implemented. It is quite clear that some of the AC, at least, or maybe SO, have difficulty to join membership because of application or implementation of UA, has serious difficulties. I don't want to give examples, but that means that they should be separate themselves from those who are members. So this sort of the universality and inclusiveness of the community will be totally broken. So I request those distinguished lawyers who are very capable to talk and talk with reasons to kindly understand this disadvantage. It is total disadvantage against many others, and we would not achieve what we intended to achieve. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. Before we move to the next speaker, I'd like to highlight again that this very discussion and this chart that you see in the Adobe Room or on the screens is not meant to be a legal analysis. It is meant to help us discuss which features we would like our preferred option to have. I have specifically put membership model with UAs in there because, as you rightly point out, Cavus, the difficulty for many in the community is the creation of the UA being perceived as an alter ego or an avatar next to the group itself. And therefore, you know, just to take the legal spin out of this, because my gift would also be would not be a legal term, right? A legal description of a model. Let's call it the avatar model, right? Because I guess that's what we have difficulties with. I have not heard anybody speak against a membership model because it's a membership model, because it empowers the community or can empower the community. The vehicle to get the membership model is the issue. So let's be very clear that we want to get away from the predicament of creating separate legal entities to go through a formal process of establishing these and what the consequences are, right? So I guess that needs to be clear that in terms of features, it is my understanding that this group and the wider community has an issue, particularly with the type of UAs, the formalization of UAs, the registration of UAs, and the associated questions and difficulty. With that, we can now move to Malcolm.
Thank you. And my comment follows on very nicely from that, actually. You asked me earlier, and this is my first opportunity to reply, whether since what I was seeking to do with the open membership model is also satisfied in many respects by the membership with UAs or the empowered SOAC model, whether that would mean that the open membership model could fall away. And I would say the answer to that is no, for this reason. Yes, they are all seeking to do the same thing by different routes. They are all seeking to ensure that the powers and mechanisms that we have all agreed upon exist and are exercised by the SOACs.
and they're all seeking to ensure that in the final analysis there is a duty to abide by that and that there is an ultimate power of enforceability. Then, some people have been, as you were just referring to, Thomas, criticizing UAs as a model for achieving that for various reasons. So the open membership model is an alternative way of achieving the same thing that doesn't have UAs. So if those that are criticizing UAs say, actually, we've been persuaded now, our concern has been satisfied, and we're willing to go with that model, then we can look at dropping the open membership model, because the purpose that it was offered for is no longer needed. But as long as those criticisms stand, then we must also consider, well, here is an alternative way that answers those criticisms of achieving the things that we're seeking to achieve. Finally, one final point, which is slightly different. Jonathan raised a good point a moment ago, and that is the accountability of the community to the public at large. One benefit that resides uniquely with the open membership model is that if in this circumstance where ICANN has acted in a way that is, for example, outside its scope or inconsistent with its fundamental commitment, if that is done in defiance of the community, then the other models provide mechanisms for doing something about that. But if that is done in association with or at the behest of the community organizations, the SOACs, then they don't provide a mechanism for dealing with that. The open membership model does. The open membership model would allow an individual who was affected by this misbehavior of ICANN to go to the IRP and get a judgment in their favor. And then, if ICANN decides to ignore that judgment, perhaps because the SOACs themselves support ICANN in ignoring that judgment, that individual who had won the IRP could still ask for enforcement of that IRP judgment. That's something that the open membership model offers that none of the other models do. Thank you.
Malcolm, you made a suggestion earlier to drop the open membership model. I'm all okay with that.
No, I did not. You made a suggestion that we should drop that. I said we should not do so.
You outsmarted me. But nonetheless, should you choose to withdraw the open membership model?
As I said, when Alan and Avery are content to say that they support UAs, and when Chris agrees that enforceability is a key requirement for this organization, come back to me about dropping the open membership model.
I'll take very good note of that, and I think you will go down in ICANN's history as the one requesting ICANN to be populated by billions and billions of members. So I'll take revenge. Next is Sebastian, please.
Yeah, it seems that we may need to learn from the past, and Paul, to me, give some explanation of what's happened in 2000. Maybe we need to have somebody else who was there at that time, what's happened and why we end up to change, the organization decide to change from the individual voters to an at-large structure like the current at-large structure members, the RALOs and ALAC. I am not sure that the world have changed and the organization have changed dramatically to give us the opportunity to try again this type of multi-hundreds or multi-million members in the organization. I just don't want to think about the WIS issue, about all those members, where the database will be, and how we will work with that. Is it a legal requirement from which country, and so on and so forth. And maybe we need to find another solution. The solution of adding to the current organization new structure on top of what are currently existing is also adding a lot of complexity. And I really think that we need to do as less as complex possible, because one thing we didn't do since 2002 is to have a full review of the ICANN organization, and with the new GTLD registry 1000, with a new registrar 100, and so on and so forth, we need to have a look to this organization, and not silo by silo, but overall. But it was not possible to be done before. Now we have the IANA stewardship transition to taking care, then it's not the right time, but it must be somewhere written in the agenda for the future. Now the question of diversity, I hope that in each and every proposal we will be able to push for more diversity at each level of the organization, and we need to try to find the solution for that. But I suggest that we put that issue in the second part of our work and not in the work stream one, even if it's very important from my point of view. It may need some in-depth discussions, and we need also to see what we need to do right now and what we can wait for. My last point is about the change of the bylaw. I think it's a very important work we have to do. We have to do it in this group, but with the other group and with the whole ICANN, and the fact that the Congress asks that the bylaw change must be done prior to the transition, it must be a good incentive for us to do it, and to do it with less complexity as possible. Thank you.
Sebastian, let me ask you a follow-up question. Your point with respect to the overall review, would that be sufficiently covered by the ATRT reviews that we plan to perpetuate? Because they would look at the overall system, right?
I am not sure. Read what it's on the ATRT. There are specific topics they can take on board. You need to change the ATRT if you want to do all that. It's 9.1, 9.2, 9.3, but there are people who know better than me because they were an ATRT, either one or two. But they can't do this overall. It's why they keep some small topic, not small, sorry, because important, but narrow, thank you. Narrow topics and not the overall organization. I don't think it's ATRT. It's a missing piece.
Yeah.
From my
but,
point of
you
view.
Know, the difficulty that I have, if you please bear with me, is that our group is chartered with looking at the accountability. So it would be out of scope for us to entirely revisit ICANN. But what we could certainly do is add some additional language requesting additional things during the ATRT reviews that we plan to perpetuate in the bylaws. And if you have some language that we could put in front of the group, by all means, please do liaise with Mathieu, who has drafted the response to public comments with respect to Workstream 2 items, so that we can maybe have a concrete suggestion from you that we could discuss. Another question for you where I would like to ask you for a very concise answer is, looking at the empowered SOAC model, is that something that you would deem least change to the existing system? So is that something that you could support? Because I see a lot of traction for this model, right? And I would like to make sure that we take you with us. And if we could do that with some additional language to this model, then I think we would be more than glad to do that.
Thank you for the question. And from my understanding now, I think it's going to the right direction, and I think we can, of course, devil in the detail, but if we can work in and spend time on this proposal to find the best way to go there, I think it's a good way, and I don't see any problems to be on board with that, with you.
And hadn't I muted my microphone, everybody would have heard my sigh of relief. So that's excellent news, Sebastian. Thank you so much. And certainly we would be more than willing to take the suggestions that you made into the profile of requirements for that specific model, which I think is a good refinement or amalgamation of the of all the models that we've previously discussed. Tijani.
Thank you, Thomas. Thomas, you are right when you said that the main issue was the UA. That's why I suggested that we have only two columns, one solution with UA, another solution without UA. Now to Jonathan, 2 points. The first one, you said that the contracted parties, you made a comparison between the contracted party and the rest, the actual discussion. The contracted parties with ICANN have a contract together, and they have both parties have to respect this, the terms of the contract. And if one of them don't do, there is the court there. This is different from making ICANN accountable to the whole community. There is no contract between them. So this is absolutely different, and that's why I don't see that there is a comparison here. Second point, you said that, yes, the single point failure is still there, but it is not a reason to not accept the membership model. I think that the ultimate goal or objective of all this exercise is to make ICANN accountable to the community. So if we still have a part of this ICANN not accountable to the community, we have to review the whole system. We have to see what we can do, unless we have a solution to it. So if we have a solution to it, yes, we can continue discussion about it and we can consider the model. But if we don't have a solution to it, I don't think that we reached the objective of the exercise. So that's why I don't think it is a good model. Thank you.
Thanks, Tijani. Next is Alan.
Thank you very much. I'm going to agree with most everything that Sebastian said. I too think the organization, the overall organization, and certainly specific parts of it need a review. I don't think it's within our mandate to recommend it. I think that's something that's going to have to live and die on a life of its own, and it's political water we don't want to wade into, at least in my humble opinion. Regarding the ATRT, we've yet to see the detailed results of the recommendations. One of the comments I made, based on a fair amount of ATRT experience, is that we should change the rules so the ATRT is not required to do A, B, C, D, and E and nothing else, that any given ATRT may choose to do something very different still within that same area. We'll see whether that makes into the final document or not. So it's a very relevant area. It's a very important area. I still don't think reorganization of ICANN is the job of that group, but that's a different issue. Within the bylaws, in terms of the bylaws, I think the way we're going right now is, I won't say minimalist, but is something that's going to be a lot easier to put in place than what we were talking about before. And the timeline is short enough, the work is heavy enough that I think that's important. I think it will make a difference. And the thing I vehemently disagree with Sebastian is he said he doesn't think much has changed in the dynamics of the world since 2000 and the problems we had with open membership. I think what's changed is the technology has made the kind of abuses we had then a lot more easier. So I would avoid it like the plague.
Thanks, Alan. Willie.
Well, I don't want to put a spanner in the works here, but it seems to me that this issue perhaps should be explored, the issue of individual membership, even if at the end of the day it is dismissed as unpractical. because if it's simply dismissed without being taken seriously, which my impression is that Malcolm's suggestion is not being taken seriously, that is not really adequate, particularly because of perceptions that the SOACs perhaps constitute an insider community. And that even if it is not adopted, I would imagine one could look at a hybrid form of membership where you have the organized community and you have individual members. That certainly seems possible, but there might be legal and other issues. There might be simple things that Sebastian is saying, is that it just becomes unmanageable, that it can be gamed, that it can be corrupted. Sure. But perhaps it should be looked at.
Thanks, Willie. Just to respond to that briefly, I think that we have listened to Malcolm's proposal and we've taken his thoughts seriously. I think that this group is sometimes characterized by allowing a little bit of humor into a serious discussions. But even more, at the outset of our work, there have been discussions about the possibility of membership by natural persons. And there was some back and forth on that, and ultimately at that early stage, our group had decided they did not want to pursue that path. So it's rather the discussion about whether we should reopen that topic or not. And my impression, and that's also something that we would usually operate on, we collect ideas and we look at those ideas that get traction with the group and others that don't get traction, and then we would perceive in our way towards consensus to build on those that got substantial traction in the group. So, you know, all this is recorded, all this is transcribed. We're not going to dismiss anything today, but from a chairing perspective, I think that the individual membership model is one that got least traction amongst the models that we previously discussed. But it's not off the table, and actually, as the hybrid model that you're suggesting, whereby you could have two layers, where a legal entity or, you know, an SOAC would exercise certain rights, and they could themselves constitute themselves of individuals, could be a way to actually solve the watchers issue. And that's, I guess, the driving force behind your comment in the first place. Let's now hear Steve.
Thank you, Steve DelBianco. A few of you have mentioned whether the ATRT review number one is sufficiently broad enough to cover the broader accountability. And I wanted to indicate that when we imported it into the bylaws in our proposal, paragraph 310, we'd look at the language in ATRT review number one. It was 9.1, Sebastian, you had it right. And 9.1 is incredibly tough language. It says that the board shall cause a periodic review of ICANN's execution of its commitment to maintain and improve robust mechanisms for public input, accountability, and transparency so as to ensure that the outcomes of its decision-making will reflect the public interest and be accountable to all stakeholders. That is an incredibly high bar of review, one that was achievable only through the leverage exerted by, frankly, the Commerce Department when it replaced the JPA and MOU with the affirmation of commitments in 2009, and that shows what leverage can give you. So we want to use the same leverage here. But I do think that that's a broad statement. Sebastian then noted that potentially, and this is Alan Greenberg in the ALAC comment, they were worried that the list that follows is somehow limiting on what the ATRT can look at. What we imported from the ATR, from the AOC, was the language that said that in this review, particular attention should be paid to, colon, and there was a list of several items. So we took full note during the analysis of comments of the ALAC comment that might be limiting, and our proposed reply to that would be to change the language to something like issues that may merit attention include, right, Alan? So instead of implying in any way that it needs to be limiting, but the ATRT very powerful review. It's a lot of work to do the reviews, which was one of the reasons we said it should be required no less frequently than every 5 years. But this community could do it every 3 years or every 2 years if we wanted to. 5 years is at the outside. You wouldn't want to wait more than 5 years to do a review. Thank you.
Thanks. Actually, I'd like to close the queue after Alan, but let's hear Jonathan first.
Again, Jonathan Zook for the record, and I'm cognizant of the dangers of a tit-for-tat kind of conversation, but as someone who, along with Alan, might have favored a debate at some point, I want to let some things not just lie. And so Tajani said that this is not the same as a contract, and the contract is something very different, and I have to take issue with that because I believe the bylaws, from a legal standpoint, actually represent a contract, and that the memo that Becky was talking about us writing, which is that we embrace the responsibilities outlined to us through the bylaws, would in fact be our response to that contract and would in fact create a contracted relationship very similar to the one that exists with contracted parties. The other issue is that I also don't want to cede the notion that we've just still got a single point of failure, because if we disperse power into the SOs and ACs and the various stakeholder groups within them that, or constituencies within them, each of those groups is going to be diligently working on the issue of how do I bring in more diverse membership, how do I ensure accountability to the constituencies that I claim to represent, et cetera, and I think that will be an ongoing reform. So I think that that's something that's going to continue to happen inside ICANN, and once again, it's probably too big a thing for us to solve because it's so dispersed in the process of this engagement. I think that this will create an incremental amount of accountability to the community as a whole, but there will still be and will always be, I believe, work to be done to improve that accountability. You look at the ALAC mission to be accountable to all end users, that's probably a mission that they will never actually accomplish, right? It'll be keep working on it indefinitely. I'm part of the ITC, and we're working to make sure that we're representing IP interests throughout the world. Geographic diversity is probably one of our biggest issues. So, I think those are things that we continue to work on, and they should be embedded in the bylaws as aspirational goals, and that's part of the reforms that we're recommending here.
Alan.
Thank you. A few things. The kind of things we're talking about is technically a contract, a memorandum of understanding. We were told earlier in this process that since ACs and SOs are not legal people, those contracts are not really binding. But ICANN has a long history of such things. The RALOs are created by a memorandum of understanding between a RALO and ICANN. The RALO doesn't exist as a formal entity. But there is a memorandum of understanding, and it does constitute the summary of what that group is doing and what it's allowed to do. So there's a long history, and I don't think we need to worry about the legalities of whether it's enforceable or not. With regard to Willie's comment, I will point out that 4 of the 5 at-large regions support individual membership. Anyone wants to do any work, support ICANN, we have a vehicle. And I hope the 5th one will be doing it soon. So you don't have to have membership in ICANN to be able to participate. There's lots of vehicles, and certainly for individuals, at large is a vehicle which we hope is viable today and will get more viable as we improve it. And lastly, on the ATRT, the statement was written by me and submitted on behalf of the ALAC. I doubt there are many ATRT former participants who would not endorse it. There may be one or two, but the fact that the ATRTs were both constrained to look at those things and constrained to not look at other things was a really important thing. And one could imagine that we will be mandated to do an ATRT every 5 years. We could charter targeted ATRTs to look at specific issues on a more frequent basis, even run them in parallel. There's all sorts of flexibility once the rules don't constrain you. Thank you.
So Tijani has asked me to briefly reply. Can you keep it very brief?
Yes, please? Very, very brief. I agree with Jonathan that the bylaw is something that I consider as something important and as a contract between the community and ICANN. And that doesn't give a legal entity to the community, to the members of the community, so doesn't have any problem, doesn't give or bring any problem So I do accept what he said. If we stop here, but if we go further and make a UA for each community, it will be a problem.
Okay, let's stop here. Cavus, you've raised your hand. You don't accept us stopping now? Okay, very briefly, please. Please, go ahead.
Thank you. Can you or somebody please describe what is membership without UA? What is the status of that? If it's the same, why we need UA? If it is not the same, how without UA, still member model, could have achieve those two elements that we wanted to have: empowerment, budget, and financial strategic plan.
So,
from the very beginning, we were told that UA is an integral part of membership or member model. But now, you could say that you could have member model without UA. So, what is the situation?
So, let me, before I turn to Becky, let me just say that all of those who thought that we would be breaking for coffee now will have to be patient for another 2 or 3 minutes. Becky, would you care to respond to that?
So, first of all, I just want to repeat what Thomas said about solving the avatar problem, the sort of unincorporated association sitting in between the SOs and ACs and the board. That's really what the empowerment model solves. What it does is it says to the SO and AC, whichever one, it says, the bylaws say we give the SOs and ACs the powers that members would have, and then the SOs and ACs agree, if they want to work together to exercise those enforceable rights. That's what's going on. Now, we could legally tear this apart and decide, I mean, it could, you know, it creates the structure that makes it legally enforceable, and so in a way it creates a legal person, but it doesn't have that separate thing. It's the SO and the AC. If it makes that election to have the enforceable powers.
As said, and this is why I like the term empowered as OAC, we don't do a legal analysis of this now. Right, so I think what's important for us to take away is that we seem to have a lot of common ground for this easy to implement. One resolution seems to be sufficient to evidence this joint will of having enforceable rights. Right, and I do remember that Josh at one point offered advice speaking exactly to that. So if that helps us reconcile the differences between those in favor of an enforceable system, an authoritative system empowering the community, and those that are severely objecting to incorporating and registering unincorporated associations, I think that's a good sign. And before we break for lunch, I would just like to for coffee. Lunch again. It's all on Ellen. Let me just try to take stock. I think what we can convey and what we should convey to the community is that we have presented a reference model with our report, clarifying that this is not a consensus position. We got feedback from inside the group and from outside the group that there were difficulties in understanding, as well as difficulties from a legal point of view, with the concept of registering unincorporated associations in particular. We have understood that message. We have reacted to that. We will bury our reference model as our preferred choice. And if there's any objection to burying the reference model, the avatar model, as our preferred choice, please do make yourself heard. So we will now, or we can, in our communications with the community, we can say we've learned that lesson. We've come up with something easier to use, but yet giving authority to the community, which we call the empowered SOAC model. And so I think we can put all the other models at rest
Let's concentrate on the empowered SOSE model. Let's have it tested whether it meets all our requirements. We shouldn't be doing that in a rush now. We're not doing a consensus call now. And we should then proceed on that basis and further look into all the details, including the diversity questions, the question of whether we can keep or maintain non-for-profit status. As Sam said, you know, all the niceties need to be evaluated. Gavus, you can't resist to ask another question?
Yes, yes. You have very strong argument to do that. Moreover, there is a precedent. TWG had a very complex procedures. After the public comment, they try to totally review that and have more simpler, which is more acceptable. So you can do that.
And we should be doing that. And I think even more so, we've never made a firm promise that we would do the reference model. We always said it's a suggestion up for debate. And we're now readjusting, which I think is a very inclusive and community-embracing process. Alan, you don't like coffee, do you?
There's also orange juice.
Excuse me. I love coffee. I and a few other people have another meeting at 4:30. Could you summarize what you plan to be doing in the last session before we break?
Mathieu will take over for that, but let me take the opportunity before I hand over to Mathieu to thank everybody for what I think is a very constructive session. I think we made huge progress reconciling what could be called divergence in the group as well with the wider community. I think we now have something tangible that we can use as a starting point for our engagement with the wider community throughout the week.
Thank you. So, very quickly, what's left on our agenda is ensuring we have common views on what the message is going to be we are sharing with the community in the next few days. How are we going to discuss with the board on Sunday? Are there any messages that we need to work on or prepare for the ICG? Any specific messages for specific communities? There's an idea floating around about a communique out of this meeting that would serve as a basis for that. That's also on the agenda. And how and start a discussion about how we would respond to NTIA's letter regarding the timeline. Those are the outstanding items on our agenda. And with that, coffee. Reconvene in 15 minutes. Okay, we're sorely missing our fellow co-chair, Thomas, who I hope will join us soon. He appeared to be quite exhausted with the previous session, but I'm sure he'll recover. Quickly, and I hope so. Just a quick point that we've received some comments that it can be a little bit noisy and difficult to follow discussions in the background if people have side discussions. So can I please encourage everyone in the room, but including those in the back, to have their conversations, if need be, maybe outside of the room, so that everyone can follow, even if they're at the back of the room. That would be much appreciated. And with these very friendly reminders, I can move to the rest of our agenda. So as I was saying before we break, we still have to look at the exchanges we'll have with the ICG and CWG stewardship. One important aspect is probably to score our progress against the conditions set out by the CWG stewardship final proposals. So that's one item we'll go through. We also need to have an initial discussion about how we would plan to respond to the letter we've received from NTIA regarding timeline. Number three is looking at the various sessions that will take place during the week, including the board session, the engagement session. We would like to discuss what you feel are priority topics we should address in this. And then finally, we have two work sessions during this week. We also need to have an initial discussion about what the expected agendas could be. And then finally, we would suggest that based on the progress we are making today, we could publish a communique out of this face-to-face meeting that would inform ASOs, ACs, any observers of our progress, and obviously drive the communication of our progress to inform the fruitful exchanges that we'll have across the week. And so we are currently, we ruined our lunch break, now we ruined the coffee break for preparing this, and we'll share this in a moment with the group. Leon is currently reviewing a draft so that we can have an initial discussion on this in this room before we leave tonight. That's the outstanding issues, and without further ado, I would like to just initiate with, maybe we can start with the CWG scoring. So there's an outstanding slide prepared by the CWG stewardship for their webinars where they highlight the conditionalities with our work. And I would hate any duplication, so let's look at this slide together. And right. So the conditions they're setting are the fact that there are community rights regarding the development and consideration of the ICANN budget. And I think the feedback we're getting from the public comment as well as the discussion we've had today shows that this is still very much an achievable goal. There's no very strong warning on that not being achievable. Second is the community rights regarding the ICANN board, and specifically the ability to appoint and remove members and to recall the entire board. That is very much something where, while there were some concerns expressed on implementation, that is still very much on our agenda. Nothing on the horizon saying that it's not going to be achievable. The INF function review incorporated into the ICANN bylaws, no problem with that. CSC incorporated into the ICANN bylaws, we've had a back and forth with the CWG stewardship. It can either be a proposal by the CWG plus ICG or us, but we're very open and absolutely no objection to that. Independent review panel made applicable to INF functions and accessible to TLD managers. Yes, it is, with the provision that it does not address the delegations and revocation aspects, but that's consistent with the CWG as well. And finally, all the mechanisms addressed be provided as fundamental bylaws. And if you look at the public comment we've received, there's no objection to that either. So we would suggest that the scorecard of our current progress against CWG conditions currently shows that we are on track, that none of the comments we've received would reveal serious concerns about feasibility or achievability of these goals, and that should be communicated to the ASOACs, especially when they are considering the final proposal of the CWG, because that might be useful for them to consider when considering their next steps with these final proposals. Would there be any objections or comments on this assessment of how we are making progress with regards to the CWG stewardship conditions? And I need AC room, which I'm not. Thomas, are you? I've lost
Sebastian,
it.
Sebastian, let's see. Sebastian, go ahead.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I don't want to enter into a loop with the CWG and what we are doing, but I am concerned that with the second column, we are not yet, we are considering, we are discussing, we have different proposals on the table, and I feel that they are a little bit too prescriptive on what we need to do and how we may end up with regarding removing board members. And I don't know how to say that, but it's a topic under discussion. If not, we have to take it out of our discussion and decide that they already have decided. But I hope that it's not the case. Thank you.
Yeah, all we can say at this point on our side is that that was part of the initial requirements we set out in our initial draft proposals, and that's still very much being considered after receiving the first set of public comments. And I think that's there's no intention to go any further than that, but. There are some implementation details that need further refinements, but in principle, there's some form of rough consensus in the public comments on that. Steve?
Thank you. Just look for a clarification based on your conversations with CWG. It has to do with the last bar in gray, the notion that all of the foregoing mechanisms are in the fundamental bylaws. And I just ask you to clarify that they understand it's not just the label fundamental, but it carries with it an entire process that we've proposed, a process for affirmative approval by a certain threshold based on weighted voting of community AC and SOs having a certain representation and structure, right? Empowered ACs and SOs or whatever you want to call it. But all that's baked into that line saying make it a fundamental bylaw because they want all of those other protections to go with it.
We can certainly get back and confirm, but it's... That has been made clear in our conversations as well as probably correspondence. And I think within the CWG group as well, thanks to the outstanding colleagues who are on both sides. Yeah. Thomas, would you want to follow up?
If my memory doesn't fail me entirely, even on one of the calls that I attended on behalf of the CCWG, I was explicitly asked whether their requests could be made fundamental bylaws. And the CWG is cognizant of the implications of making them fundamental bylaws. So I think we can take that for granted. I'm not against double-checking, but we should assume that the CWG requires these to be fundamental bylaws with all the legal implications that this has.
Thank you, Thomas. Any other comment on that? Good. I think I would also encourage each of you in your discussions, I'm sure you'll be part of discussions on the CWG final proposal, to make sure to communicate this to your respective groups, because I know that there's been some concerns around the ability to consider the CWG stewardship final proposals because of the conditionalities. It's very important that this message gets conveyed during this week. So that's item number one. Item number two is NTIA letter on timeline. So we're going to put it on screen, but if I were to summarize my understanding of the letter, it is about, okay, how long is that going to take to you? To finalize your work. We are aware that the ICG is also, so the recipients of the correspondence were ICG chairs, ECWG co-chairs. And we are aware of the ICG starting to consider their response and the need to coordinate with the ICG. That is definitely on our plans for in the coming days. And we've received correspondence from Keys asking for some discussions, details on timeline on our list today on behalf of the ICG. So Keys and Caboose are acting as ICG liaison. And so there's a need for coordination with the ICG on this. But what we would like to achieve here is an initial discussion on what the feelings are in this group about the kind of response we can provide, the kind of timeline we might be considering, basically any directions for us co-chairs to liaise with the ICG or for the group as a whole to further work during this week towards a clearer timeline and response to Larry. So with that, I think Caboose raised his hand to for a first intervention. So please, Caboose.
Yes, as a liaison of ICG, yesterday when we discussed the NTIA letter to the chairman or co-chairs of ICG, we reminded ourselves that the same letter more or less came to you, and we consider that although the reply to the NTIA would not be identical, but should not be contradiction with each other. Therefore, we were assigned to raise the issue to you, and whatever reply or framework of the reply or message you prepared with respect to the timeline, we consider that in ICG in order to assist us to formulate our final reply. Presumably, if I'm not mistaken, we have a short meeting ICG on Thursday, and perhaps if by that time there is some sign of the framework of your reply, perhaps we'll be able to convey that to the ICG. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. And just to remind you of the specific questions raised by Keith on behalf of the ICG, they were related to at what stage in the work of the accountability group will proposed bylaw amendments be published for public comment? Is that text going to be developed specifically by the accountability group, or will that be conducted during a later implementation phase? And should we consider batching or proposed bylaw changes into a single process or conduct them separately? So there's a lot of synchronization to be had. Before I move to the queue, just a reminder that the current timeline we've had in our public comment document was that we were aiming for approval by SOACs of a final Workstream 1 proposals in Dublin, and implementation was planned to start right at that point, or maybe even a bit before, and conclude, I think, about our estimates, which were obviously estimates, were going until June 2016. And we have received comments asking for further details, but haven't received any comments saying that it was too fast, too slow, whatever, at this point. It's just to make sure we have this in the scope. So I see a queue forming with Steve first. Thank you, Steve. That was quick. And so now we have Thomas.
Thanks, Mathieu. I guess looking at the letter, we need to specify two milestones in our plan, one of which would be the finalization of the transition plan and one for the implementation, because, as you know, our Workstream 1 requirements need to be committed to but they don't need to be fully implemented. As you will have seen from our discussion earlier today, we have changed our approach in terms of how we, what the community model is going to be. We have to check with legal counsel what the consequences or the impact on timelines would be. So I would suggest that we roughly stick to what we have in our plan, and that maybe this group gives some discretion to the chairs to liaise with the other groups, but also to liaise with legal counsel and ICANN Legal to drill down to the level of detail needed in order to make adjustments should they be needed. But I guess that, the rough pillars of our plan are being specified, but in order to come up with a concrete date, I think we would need to do a little bit more outreach to the groups I mentioned. And my recommendation would be that we take this off your shoulders, off the shoulders of the plenary. We liaise with the groups. We get back with information on you, and then we seek agreement with the others that need to get back to NTIA.
And we have working sessions for that later on. One aspect that which I think might be valuable to test, and that's an echo to something we've discussed earlier, is we could release some of the pressure on the timeline if some of the if ICANN were able to assign some resources to preparing the language and the details. I'm not speaking about implementation because I understand it's a difficult word. Maybe as soon as after this meeting, not waiting until Dublin to start on the type of recommendations that are getting a lot of traction and are not withheld by any further discussion, including the mission and values discussion, including some of the concerns we've received from the board about the consistency of the changes we're proposing to the bylaws with the overall bylaw system. That's something that probably can be started right away to avoid pushing back the pressure on timeline down to the end of the year. So that might be one of the key messages we would convey to maybe NTIA, but also to the board. And I'm almost anticipating the next point. Caboose, I saw your hand was raised.
Yes, yesterday also in the ICG, there was some suggestions that ICANN Legal Department or the Legal Council or two together start to draft the partial draft of the bylaw. After it was mentioned that it is not appropriate to do something, we have to wait until we have the full picture with respect to the drafting of the new bylaw in the two parts, fundamental and traditional, and that waiting for the result of the CCWG, and perhaps you mentioned that in your timeline, when you expect that this bylaw, new bylaw, will be drafted and ready for implementation. In that case, ICG for the time being perhaps would not ask for any partial or preliminary draft of some part of the bylaw, waiting for the entire picture to be clear, and then starting to ask the particular concerned group to do that drafting. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I think that highlights an issue that we need to clarify with the ICG leadership and report to the group. So that's certainly going to be one of the key aspects of our discussions. I am seeing Sam and then Jordan. Sam, where are you, Sam, now?
Oh, Sam, hi. Hi there. Thanks. This is Sam Eisner from ICANN. And I just wanted to confirm, we've also been thinking about how we can make sure that as we understand where the proposals are, how ICANN can be of help to the community in moving towards implementation as quickly as possible. So, I think our thoughts are directly in line with what I'm hearing here, so we're on the same page.
Thanks, Sam. That's very good to hear. Jordan?
In terms of the time frame, we have the constraint of having to try and have a report ready for SOAC sign-off at Dublin, right? That's still the kind of central target. And that, I think, relates to the degree of, you know, if we're going to get into the bylaws drafting stage as part of our next proposal, that means we have to really do that bylaws drafting in the next 2 or 3 weeks, because we'd need to discuss the bylaw drafting at the face-to-face meeting in Paris in July and then seek public comment on it through our 40-day PC period. So I think we just have a project management task to do to work out how much we can do between now and when we have Paris and when we have to go to public comment. And so I think we need to keep in place the caveat with any communication we do about time frame that we're going to do our best to get to the Dublin meeting. But that, I don't know whether how to say it right, we might not. But that if we don't, we'll definitely have it for Marrakesh. That sounds a bit blunt. I believe that we should be able to get everything we need done in time for Dublin. But I guess we'll know more about that by the end of next week.
Just the plan we've had and communicated so far was not to provide final bylaw wordsmithing as part of our final proposals. Because we know that's too challenging a task to achieve in such limited time. And however, we want to be extremely precise into what these bylaw changes will capture and cover. The other reason why we were saying this is precisely for the reasons set out by the board. We are not in a position to fully assess the implications of wordsmithing changes in the bylaws with regards to the overall bylaw architecture, or potentially references to these bylaws in contracts and other things. And that's ICANN's legal job, obviously, and we need to be very careful about this, that we don't set an expectation that it's going to be perfectly wordsmithed, when actually it would probably be a risky thing to finalize this too early. So that's when we say we stick to the plan. It's currently, our plan does not intend to have final wording, word-by-word definition of the bylaws. However, we have highlighted this morning a number of discussion points regarding the mission and core values, like, for instance, private sector-led or whatever. Those items need to be clarified in terms of what's our proposal, so that we can then follow up and ensure that the final wording is consistent with our bylaw changes requirement. I think it's important, and that's certainly going to be a discussion we'll have with the ICG to make sure we're on the same page on what we are about to deliver and when. And I see Cavus has a follow-up.
Yes, sorry to come back again. You are absolutely right. Actual preparation of the final draft of the bylaws is not CCWG mandate. You indicate what are the changes. These changes would be in the fundamental or should be in the traditional, and so on and so forth. You send the proposal to the ICANN. It may change. It may be subject to some comment and so on and so forth. But the final drafting of the bylaws is, in my view, a duty of the ICANN, with or without the legal counsel or within only legal department of ICANN, and put it to the public comment. It is a separate issue from the public comment of the CCWG. I hope that we could be clear on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Uri-Lain, very much. Okay, so that's, I think, what we need to go and liaise with the ICG on that matter. So moving to the next item we need to consider is the various sessions we'll have over the week, starting with a very promising session of engagement with the ICANN board. We've started the discussion this morning. I think it's so this session will be, I understand, chaired by Marcus Coomer, who's here, which is very valuable. Thank you, Marcus, because that enables better preparation. We have apologies from Bruce Tonkin, our board liaison. He's unable to join this meeting in Buenos Aires until Tuesday, but he'll join us for the later sessions. The suggestions that I would make to start discussing this board meeting, because obviously then we want to hear from you, is that first of all, we discuss about how we can communicate between the CCWG and the board in an efficient fashion to explain the proposals, understand the concerns from the board members, and iterate around this. I'm tempted to say without exchanging lengthy papers, but maybe that's a bit blunt. I don't know. I don't know if it's diplomatic enough. But I guess there's a topic of discussion that is how we can, further the discussion. I understand from the papers that we're receiving that there's a very strong amount of interest within the board for our work, and rightly so. And that there's a little bit of a struggle about how to best communicate this interest to us without interfering with our group. So that's certainly something we need to discuss honestly and with the board. Second point would be obviously how we move forward with the list of questions we've received. There would certainly, this session will not be the right place to go into each and every question. But maybe if there's interest from board members, there could be other sessions where I think face-to-face sessions would be much more useful than answering each and every of these questions in a 120 pages paper that would then be summarized by someone else to the board members and then get back to it 10 to 15 page extra questions. And I mean, that's definitely not the kind of process we need to have right now. So certainly we'll have to address this second point, which is how we move forward with these legitimate concerns and questions. And third aspect would be the question that we've started raising about how the board could direct allocate resources to starting the consideration of setting the proposals, at least the proposals that get most traction, into music, into details, as soon as possible, so that we lower the pressure on the timeline for the end of the year and the beginning of next year. To me, that would be the three type of questions I would have with the board, obviously including a short introduction to our proposals and a report about our face-to-face meeting. And I'm open to hearing the group if you see other topics to be discussed or angles you would want to or things you want to prepare for that board meeting. I like when there's no question. So we're looking at an agenda which is going to be a report on our face-to-face and progress, discussion about how to move forward with the questions from the board, discussion about how to best communicate with each other, and discussion about allocation of resources within ICANN to support the further stages of work even before Dublin. That's the kind of agenda we're looking at. Okay? That's fine. Good. So other sessions during the week. We have an engagement session on Monday, right after the opening ceremony. I don't remember what's planned, but it's basically an engagement session, so we'll update about the progress and have as many questions as possible. We're preparing for that tomorrow, right?
Yes.
Yes, Thomas, please.
Yes, actually, there have been some discussions with the CWG on how to best go about with this town hall meeting. So we have liaised with Lisa and Jonathan, and we've agreed that we need to set the scene correctly for the community to understand what we're doing. So basically, we're going to have three parts of or three segments of the session. In the first session, we're going to introduce the history of our works, of both groups, or actually of all the four groups, including the two other technical proposals, starting with the NTIA's announcement last March, but that's going to be quite brief. We're going to discuss where we are, and our group will be the host of this meeting, if you wish, so we will be chairing everything. And after we have presented where we are now, what the outcome of the public comment period was, the update on our deliberations today, and over the weekend, we will then hand it over and invite Jonathan and Lisa to the podium to speak particularly to the dependencies between the CWG and the CCWG. So we will not that much dwell on the proposal worked on by the CWG, because the CWG has its own engagement session in the afternoon of that very day. So emphasis of the town hall meeting in the morning after the opening ceremony is going to be our group, and then the focus of the afternoon session is going to be the CWG. I hope that helps clarify a little bit, but it's not. Lisa, am I correct? You're nodding? That's excellent. Thanks.
Okay, so that's the engagement session. We also have Tuesday is a day full of engagement with many constituencies, CCNSO session. The ALAC session is on Tuesday as well. Yeah. So this, we're going to be all over the place. So that's why a formal communique is going to be very useful, because it provides documentation to the progress we've made today. And ensures consistency of messages carried across the various communities. Those sessions will probably be very much dedicated on a bit of education for understanding and clarifying. Also, getting more clarity on feedbacks we've received when needed. On Wednesday, we have a GAC session where probably we will raise some of the questions that were mentioned earlier by Thomas about the intentions of the GAC in the new framework we're setting up to join the community mechanism, stay as an advisory committee, and that's probably, so we're going to inform, we will have some of the government questions, legal memos, and we'll have the lawyers with us to provide answers when there are questions. And we'll also probably ask a couple of questions to the GAC, or at least indicate that directions that could be provided after this meeting would certainly help inform our second public comment document very usefully. But obviously that the group is still very flexible about adjusting to government willingness to be part of the community mechanism. And that's going to be the key, I think, one of the key discussions. Although there's a wider set of questions and concerns that can be addressed. After that one, we have other sessions. And then we get into our second working session. So we have a working session on Thursday afternoon and on Wednesday afternoon, and a third working session on Thursday morning. The type of items that will have to be on the agenda are the NTIA letter. That's something where we need to come back to you with more substantial proposals by then. I suppose we would have time until Wednesday to elaborate a little bit on the empowered SOAC model and get back to this discussion based on a written submission. Other items that I would suggest we start discussing, at least as initial discussions, are some of the new items requested by public comments, including SOAC accountability, accountability roundtable. Sorry, Steve.
Stress tests. Several additional stress tests and enhancements.
Stress tests are need to be addressed. You're right. Diversity enhancements. I think that's all I've had. Human rights. If there's progress on that, and other discussion topics might progress on that, but human rights, I think, are in a process of Work Party 2 refinement, which, if it's ready, could come back to the agenda. And the other item I think we need to discuss, at least to get a broad direction of where the group would like to head, is board staff accountability discussions. That's one of the items from the public comments where we haven't really discussed whether we want to take this on in Workstream 1, in Workstream 2, how far we want to go. And so we are prepared as co-chairs to prepare a sort of a short issue statement at the beginning so that we have an initial discussion and then see whether we need to assign a task to a work party to refine this until before public comment number 2. Any other topics that need to be put on our two agendas on Wednesday and Thursday? I noted stress test. We'll try and keep some flexibility there because obviously feedback from the community is also going to be on the agenda. And Sebastian, so is to say? Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry, I'm not looking in the physical room.
Thank you. It's not linked too much with what we will have to do, but I know that Thomas already answered at the beginning of the meeting that work parties are open. But with what happened today, I would like very much that we have a clear understanding of how the work party will work during this week and when they will meet to allow this openness of this work party. Thank you.
Thank you, Sebastian. I think it's it's a fair comment that any of the parties working on the documents should make clear where and when they're meeting during the week to ensure the highest participation possible. I see no other hand or comment. So, yes, Thomas, you want to add something? Oh, yes. There are still some time slots open where we can do the presentation into some constituencies if on Tuesday or even some time slots on the Wednesday. And we still have night slots, I'm afraid.
I think that's what you have night slots.
Well, I don't know about you. I thought we had night slots. Sorry. Oh, Pio now, there?
Yes, if there are some slots, the ASO has been discussing about being able to meet with the CCWG. Would appreciate being given a slot. Thank you.
Okay, so we're tasking Alison Adam to liaise with ASO to find a suitable slot. That would be, I think, very valuable, considering the very thoughtful and useful feedback that we receive from the numbering community to further expand on this. To Jenny.
Thank you, Mathieu. I would like to ask to inform us or to send an email with the updated schedule with the right rooms, because, for example, for this meeting, the room has changed. So if there is any other change, please send a whole schedule with the whole changes that may happen.
Action item taken. Right. So with that, I'm turning to Sébastien.
Thank you. I know that you are open to go where SOACs and others are asking you to go. My suggestion is a little bit the reverse. I think it's important that the whole community gets the same information, the same presentation. I hope that you will also reach out to some SOAC who have not asked you to come to get to them. I think it's important.
Just to, for clarification, we've reached out to everyone, and the point of having the discussion we're about to have about a communique is to standardize the message that everyone gets, so that there's if there's an ambiguity in the way it's this message is conveyed on the podium, the reference document is existing, so that everyone can refer to the same kind of the same information, I hope that will accomplish at least partially what you're expecting. You wanted to add something, Thomas?
No, just to say that we have reached out to all community leaders. We've offered to come see them to answer their questions. Some have gotten back to us asking for us joining them, such as the BC, the IPC, and some others. Others have said they have asked their groups and their pending feedback. For example, the ISPs have said, well, they've communicated that to the constituency. They don't yet know whether our services are required. Others have remained silent, right? But even though I just wanted to illustrate that there have been different levels of feedback. So if you have other ideas for us to be more inclusive, by all means, please let us know. But we think that by having public meetings, the town hall meeting, offering to join them on calls or come visit them, there's not much more that I can think of doing in order to embrace them.
Okay. So, Tijani, is that a new hand? No. It's not. Good. So we're coming to the closing remarks, astonishingly. And the closing remarks are about what do we communicate to the overall world about this meeting. And as we speak, I think Leon is circulating a first draft, hastily arranged, so please bear with us for language and grammar and everything, but we've tried to cover the key points for this meeting. And I see a hand raised from Steve.
Thank you, Matthew. While you're waiting to circulate that, I was talking at the break with our legal counsel for the CCWG, and they strongly recommend that I make a clarification that would be helpful, and it might even be something that sneaks into the communique that you're drafting now. And I'm still phenomenally excited about Becky's breakthrough on empowered AC and SOs. And when we discussed that, we said that any AC and SO can adopt a resolution saying that they're coming together in order to exercise the powers given in the bylaws. And I had said that that resolution alone was sufficient to give that AC&SO, you know, the legal personhood it needs. Doesn't have to register as a UA, doesn't have to create articles, doesn't have to create voting avatars, and all that's accurate. But I should have added there's one other requirement. The ICANN bylaws would need a single sentence provision indicating that any AC&SO could get the rights of members if they chose to associate or act together to do so. So you create a hook in the bylaws so that the resolution passed by the GAC or the ALAC or the CC&SO, the resolution ties into that. And then the AC&SO can directly exercise the power, which resolves all the concerns about registering as UAs, which we've heard about from the community. So thanks, sir. I can put that in the chat or send it to you in case it's something that's appropriate for the communique.
Thank you, Steve. Let's look at the communique along those lines. Leon, did you manage to send it around? I'm not sure I'm getting my emails anyway.
My connection is not that stable, as I think many of us are experiencing difficulties. But it says that it's going out, so it should be out in a second.
Shall we start reading it then?
So
yeah, let me start and see whether I have something that can enables me to read it. Yes, I can.
So I think you should have it already.
Let me start reading. Sit back, relax. So members and participants of the Cross-Community Working Group on Enhancing ICANN's Accountability, CCWG Accountability, met in Buenos Aires, Argentina on June the 19th, 2015. Is there any objection? No. The CCWG face-to-face meeting in Buenos Aires, Argentina was attended in person by, we still have to count the members and participants, as well as by a number of participants and observers that joined the meeting remotely using the virtual meeting room. We had, I think, one advisor, really? So one advisor also participated. That's the easy part. So the group reviewed the comments received from the community during the first public comment period on their initial draft report. We provide the link. And we can report the following. Broad support was received for the overall accountability architecture proposed based on the four building blocks, i.e. an empowered community, the board, the bylaws, and the independent review process. And we would provide the links to the videos where we describe these accountability frameworks in three languages. And by the way, if there are any volunteers to do that in more languages, I know ICANN COMS is very willing to do that. So if we can do it in Arabic, if we can do it in Chinese, the script in English is available. It's just about reading this in front of a prompter for 5 or 6 minutes. It's terrible exercise.
He found it terrible because I did the original version, so he had basically to say what I was saying first.
I tried.
So, most of the comments considered the proposals as improvements to ICANN's current accountability mechanisms. Several commenters recommended that the CCWG take a more detailed look at the accountability of the community itself, the ASOs and ACs, and also to ensure that ICANN is accountable to all stakeholders, including those outside ICANN. While most commenters expressed support for the recommendations, some expressed concerns regarding implementation details and complexity, as well as on the underlying costs and risks associated. The CCWG values the input received so far and will continue working to refine its initial draft report. While encouraged by the support received on the overall approach, the group acknowledges the concerns expressed and will give due consideration to suggestions and concerns as it develops further versions of its report. There's a little bit of redundancy here that we'll need to fine-tune. With regards to the community empowerment models, that's our discussion this afternoon, the CCWG revisited the various models being discussed an acknowledged commonality of views with regards to expectations from such models, including the need to set up mutual accountability and enhancements to openness and diversity. A number of commenters have criticized the reference model under which ASOs and ACs were required to set up separate legal entities, such as formally registering unincorporated associations, as their legal vehicle to exercise community powers as too complex. The CCWG has analyzed these comments carefully and now focuses on a refined model. The approach, provisionally called the Empowered ASO-AC model, gives the community comparable authority while not adding legal entities separate from the ASOs and ACs. That's the kind of wording that we need to be very aware of. The CCWG also considered public comments related to the dependencies with the CWG stewardship's final proposal. As this proposal is under consideration by chartering organization during ICANN 53, and that's something I've made up right now, the CCWG feels important to report that each of the items related received overall support from the community, and none of the comments suggested that CWG requirements could not be met. The CCWG will share these outcomes and considerations with the various groups and communities during ICANN 53. The group looks forward to continuing the fruitful exchanges that inform further deliberations towards a second round of public comment, which is expected to be published by the end of July. Thank you. It's even worse than a prompter. let's take discussions and cover first.
Yeah, three small suggestions. First, we have not reviewed the comment. We have reviewed results of that, but not reviewed at this meeting the comment, the result of the review. Review was done before, and we spent considerable amount of time on that, so we should not give you the impression that these 2 hours we review all those 85 pages. That is point one. Point two, in somewhere you're talking about complexity, you need to add legal implication also, and legal implication. And the third one, you refer to the term or word criticize. I suggest to replace that by serious concerns. Nobody criticized us, but they expressed their concerns about the applicability or result of that. These are the three quick things that came to my mind, if I remember correctly what you said. Thank you. I didn't take any note, but I just had this impression that these three small suggestions make me think.
Thank you. To Johnny.
Mathieu. Either you repeat the last sentence before the mention of the CWG, or you send the document so that I can read it better.
So the document is underway. I don't know
okay.
if it's arrived.
Thank you.
I can do two things at a time, but I can only do two things at a time. Sebastian?
Yeah. Thank you very much. I have just one concern with the word overall in the last paragraphs, first line before the end. Item related received overall support. I would be more comfortable with another word, but I don't know which one. It's a question I ask during the discussion about what the CWG ask about recall of the board and so on and so forth. If we don't have any way, if we say we overall support, then we will not discuss this issue, and that's a done deal. If we are still under review, and we will discuss that, and I hope it is the case once again, I would like to find another one than word than overall. Thank you.
Maybe received support from the community would fit. Tijani, probably that was an old hand. Process forward. How long do we When do we want to publish this? My key question. Yeah. So, would to? No. Well, there might be a little bit of implications for putting this into a nicer frame, but I'm also conscious that there might be a need for just cooling it down for a few hours. Yeah, so we would ask for objections on or concerns on the list until what? 2359 UTC?
I'd suggest, if I may, is there anyone in this room that needs to further look at the communique? Because the only thing that I think we would need to have done, and that's one of the sacrifices you have to pay when you are having a linguistically diverse group, you know that you get crappy English. So we need comms to clean that up. But do you guys need more time to review substance? And if not, I think we consider this approved, and we just submit it as soon as the language is polished. What's that? Okay. Is Hillary in the room? So we need to come to how quickly they can turn this around. Then maybe we say that.
Yeah. Well, if they can turn it around fast, then midnight is appropriate. But if it's if they turn it around by 11 tonight, then I guess that would be a little bit of a tough requirement. But I mean, let's set a target to publish it by tomorrow midday, local Argentinian time.
If you're willing to tidy up the language, that's fine.
I was just going to say, like, I don't see what comms would add, to be honest. It's our report of our meeting, and if you want someone who's an English language native speaker to look at it, I can see like three reorderings of sentences that might help, but we might as well just get it out there as quickly as we can, right?
But if you're volunteering to review, by all means, please do, and then we can circulate earlier, accept objections or concerns by midnight, and disseminate as soon as we can.
We can close the meeting. We could close the meeting. Motivated people can stay and do that in an open and transparent manner and circulate it. And we... It's at least 5 hours for feedback. And then we aim at publishing this at least in the first few hours. Oh, we have Jim coming in. Excellent. How about a communique? And then we'll publish this very soon on Saturday. All right? Leon, would you like to do any other closing remarks? Because I'm totally through.
No, of course, we would like to thank everyone that's been with us in this room for the day. And we have a very packed agenda for the rest of the week. And, of course, a big thank you to my coaches who mainly had the complete burden of chairing these sessions today. So can you join me in an applause, too?
You're in the background drawing strings.
And I'd like to thank our excellent staff, you know, for managing the AC room. And sometimes my impression is that they take notes even quicker than we speak, right? Thanks to the technical people in the background. And to all of you, and last but not least, Miracle Whale and Magic Sanchez.
And Reeve Thomas.
Thanks, everyone. Hey, Robin.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask a quick question. If we could certify that the lawyers can meet with the drafting group tomorrow on the bottle.
We first need to, and we haven't had time to fully consider this, discuss how we want to proceed on the bylaw and others. So I'm not in a position right now to say we certify or not, because I don't have a view of everything that has to take place tomorrow.
Yeah.
But we'll certainly consider this quickly so that we can have a productive Saturday and Sunday as well. And we'll turn to Becky for how she would suggest we arrange this. And with that, thank you very much, everyone.